Blog Talk Radio.
When I'm down on my knees, you always pick me up, turn me round. So I try to do the thing I know you want me to when you're around. Take me high when I am low. So baby, there's one thing I need to know. You're my twin soul, twin soul. There's only
thank you very much for coming to the show today. We have a great guest going on today. Author of Fact or Fiction, The Paris and M6 Crashes. Now, my name is Seth. I'm with PsychicsGoneWild.com. You can catch any one of us there, PsychicsGoneWild.com. And you can also see my website at PsychicSeth.com. Getting to our guest, I am really excited to welcome Colin Hall to the show. Colin, is this you?
It is indeed. How are you?
Oh, good. I'm doing so good. And I'm so excited. This is a topic that I really love to wrap my hands around. Can you first tell us more about your book, or more about you, just so we can kind of get going on the same plane as you might be at?
Yeah, I mean, firstly, my actual chosen profession is security. I'm actually a security advisor for clients over here in the UK. Writing was an accidental profession that I bumped into, purely by chance, really, because I was researching something for a client that led me to research a phrase or a subject on the M6, which led me to the M6 paranormal crash, as it became known on the internet. And that sort of led me down a path of reading into these reports, both about the M6 in Birmingham in England and about Paris, France, that brought me to a point where I wound up writing a book, which was most unusual.
And so is this the first book that you've written?
It is the first one I've ever written, yes.
Awesome. And you know, I was taking a look at it, and it is it's very interesting how you put everything together. It's not in the form of, you know, your normal book. Can you elaborate more on that?
Yeah, I was fortunate enough to work with an extremely good illustrator, a chap by the name of Paul Loudon. And what I didn't want to do was write hundreds of pages of line upon line of prose, which would have probably lost people and lost their interest. So what I decided to do was literally take everything that I'd written down over the period during my research, whether they be doodles, scrapbooks of notes, and photographs, and literally put them together as a scrapbook, which was effectively a window into my mind and into my thinking about the subject matter. So what you have effectively is my thoughts in paper for people to then have a read and deduce or make their own deductions, rather than me dictating exactly what I thought, because, as I maintain, the book is very open-ended. There is no actual conclusion that I offer, only possibilities.
Right. Very good. Very good. I am going to invite one of my friends to join into the conversation, if you don't mind. I'm Kelly. Kelly, is this you?
This is me. I think we have Gary in there, too.
Yeah. Gary in there too. Did you want to give me a? I forgot his first three.
Which? Oh, the 66 one.
Another. Oh yes, there we go. Beautiful. So I have on the line with us. So I got Gary Weimer, and I have Kelly Bolter, and we're all gonna kind of talk to you. I think I got a little bit of feedback from Gary, so I'm going to go ahead and let him reset his line. but as getting into your book and the story, I'm going to get right into that here in just a second. But I wanted to let the listeners know that for the first half hour, I really want to get into this book. I really want to know kind of the meat and the potatoes and kind of get a good amount of discussion going. So I'm not going to bring anybody else in for a little bit. Once we've gotten that gone, I'm going to go ahead and get some callers in. You can ask some questions. I would appreciate it. We can try and stay on topic. And we will do some readings too. But this is really fascinating information. I really want to know a little bit more about this, if that's okay. What do you guys think, Kelly and Cole? Is that okay?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that sounds really good.
Awesome.
And I missed. I apologize. I missed the first a few of the first minutes there. It's like I did catch this is Colin's first book, and it's like how did he get into doing this? What got him fascinated with this subject? It's like, you know, what led him to this? Has this been like a lifelong thing, or has it been something just like, you know, recently, or you know, what led him to down the path that that brought him to where he's at today?
Well, I think for me it was very much an accidental labor of love. I'll be perfectly honest. I didn't set out to write a book. What I set out to do was actually investigate what I would normally do in my day-to-day job, which is security, which was check out a stretch of motorway. And then what ensued was this huge weight of research and reports on the internet about this so-called crash on the M6 that became known as the M6 paranormal crash.
Wow.
And as you can imagine, with my background, you become very inquisitive.
Right.
And the more I looked, the more I wanted to know.
Wow, neat. Very neat. Led to another, and you just kind of blossomed out, and you just kind of kept notes, and it's like pretty soon you went, I've got enough notes to really make a book, huh?
It was almost like that, yes. And you know, as luck would have it, a friend of a friend of a friend sort of hooked me up with a publisher, and before we know it, you know, and I'm praising this, as you can imagine, but before we know it, the book is out. But in effect,
wow.
What you see there is my mind and my notes and my scribbles. over a period of time, put into some modicum of sense, you know, with a, I have to say that I had a very good illustrator and a very good editor, in truth, who helped me make sure that it was, well, it made sense to read, which was probably first and foremost. I don't know if you've ever scribbled your own notes down, but if you revisit your own notes after a week, they tend to be a mess.
Yeah, you kind of sit there and go, what in the world was I trying to say? It's like those dream journals you keep, like, at 2 o'clock in the morning, you go, what in the world was I really trying to say? Right.
That's exactly it. And, you know, I mean, my notes were dreadful, but fortunately, like I say, we were able to decipher them and turn them into this book.
Wow.
Now, with this book, when you were writing or getting your research for it, did you travel a little bit for it too, right?
Yes, I did. I mean, I spent time driving up and down the M6. Now, you know, just to put that into context for listeners, that's pretty much like driving up and down the New Jersey Turnpike, for example. Not very interesting. But on the flip side of it, I did spend time in Paris, which obviously was far more interesting as a location. But yes, I did spend a great deal of time taking photographs and cataloguing what I thought may correlate to the reports that were on the internet.
Wow.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of sitting here. So it's like, so the M6 is like a specific stretch of road. I mean, it's like, you know, like how long of a highway? I mean, like, you know, here in the United States, you know, we'll have like Interstate 80, you know, literally can stretch like all the way across the country, like, you know, 3,000 miles. So how long of a stretch of a road, like, is the M6?
Well, the M6 goes from, I think it's from the Scottish borders down to Birmingham. So it's about, I would think it's about 250 miles. So it's quite a substantial piece of road in this country, because bear in mind the country is probably about 600 miles long. The bit that I was examining, in truth, was actually only about a mile.
Oh, my goodness.
Which is what I drilled it down to, yeah. I mean, the actual, you know, based on these reports that I was reading and based on other bits and blog snippets and Twitter feeds that I was getting into, I managed to get it to one specific area outside of Birmingham. So it was really, in the end, when I drilled it down, it was about a one-mile stretch of motorway.
My goodness, wow.
Well, and how much secrecy was involved in this? I mean, was there a difference? I mean, did they try and give out a little bit of information here and then close up, or was it all, or how exactly did that work?
Well, I think this is the interesting thing, and this is why my book is called Facts or Fiction. There were reports emanating from a man who goes by the name of Mark Collins. There was a series of reports that came out in 2010, starting with an incident that allegedly happened on the M6 towards the end of 2009, and then finishing up with incidents in Paris and then in Manchester in England. So there was a series of reports that came out from one source. But what interested me was how much this caught fire on the internet. And I think when I saw it in, it was aggregated into the USA Today, the Huffington Post, Florida Today, American News Magazine. There was several blogs and reports all over Asia, and then reports in the UK. So it just seemed to gather momentum over a period of time to the point where, I think at its peak, there was something like 2 million pages on the internet that had some link to these stories.
Right.
Wow.
And throughout the book and throughout the entire process of writing the book, I've always maintained an open mind as to whether it is fact or whether it is fiction or whether it is disinformation, you know, whether it's a hoax. You know, there are many different theories behind what prompted so many people to report on this story.
Right. Yeah. Kind of like a Roswell or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, within the Secret Services, there's no sort of, you know, secret made of the fact that disinformation is a key tactic. You know, whether this was a case of disinformation or not, I don't know. Certainly, the main protagonist, the main reporter in all this, Mark Collins, is absolutely nowhere to be seen. So he's either up in a, you know, in a puff of smoke, or he was the stall pigeon and used for his own purposes and then discarded. There are so many different theories that opened up as I was researching it. The one thing that did always interest me is, you know, when I go to Paris and I sit down and look at Paris and I meet cafe owners, there was something, or there is an acknowledgement that somebody was in the town at that particular point of the incident in Paris. So I always wonder quite exactly what happened, although I've never actually been able to confirm what did happen.
Right. Wow. So one of the main gentlemen that you're saying is like either started this or got the ball rolling. Maybe it's like he disappeared. It's like, and nobody knows where he's at.
Nobody knows where he's at. No, exactly. But the thing that also struck me was the video that came out in I believe it was 2011. There was a video that purported to be from the crash scene on the M6, and there are inaccuracies in it. There's no doubt in my mind that it isn't consistent with what I would consider to be a traditional crash scene. But whoever did that video, there was a lot of expense involved, and there had to be a motive to do that. And as of yet, I've not actually uncovered what the motive was.
Right. Right, yeah. And that makes a lot of sense. It's like, yeah, who was doing what? Because, I mean, I agree with you. There's a lot of times it's like, you know, how do you tell? It's like, is this real? Is this Memorex? You know, it's like, is this something that's promoted by, you know, the government, you know, for disinformation, as you say, or, you know, the red herring trail, or it's like, or is this something that they're really trying to cover up? It's like, you know, you go, which category do you categorize it in? It's like, it's just kind of there, and you're like going, well, this is what happened and what we know. It's like, but where does it go? It's like, where does that jigsaw puzzle, you know, piece fit? It's like, really good question.
Oh, for sure. And of course, the other thing that always sort of crossed my mind and is in the book is, was this some sort of flawed or failed viral campaign, or is it for something that we've not even seen yet?
Wow. It hasn't come out yet. Right.
Tell us a little bit about the crash site, you know, kind of what you observed when you got there.
Well, what I observed, and bear in mind that I observed these sites, you know, potentially well over a year after any event had happened. So there was no physical evidence, but the locations tied in. So where on the M6 they talk about there being a grass verge and the potential for people hiding on the grass verge, there was a grass verge at the location. You know, where people talk about a bright light seen on the motorway. In the video, it shows a line of fire across a carriageway. So that would tie in with the line of the bright light that was reported to have been seen. Where it gets a bit sticky is when you go to Paris, and again, the MO of the crash was identical, bright light, passengers. And this was the other thing, passengers or occupants in the front vehicles on the crash on the M6 were allegedly never found. They just completely disappeared. In Paris, apparently, according to witness statements, people disappeared and reappeared, which made that even more odd.
Wow.
And these are the links, you know, the MO, if you like, the modus operandi that link the two incidents. Where it becomes slightly more peculiar in Paris is that there was allegedly a break-in at the morgue where the bodies were taken, and there were four bodies from the crash. Allegedly to inject the bodies with something. Now, according again to the reports by Mark Collins, three of the bodies were injected. The one that wasn't, and again I quote what he was saying in his reports, they believed that the person would never have been breathing the atmosphere from Paris at the time. You know, the blood levels were not consistent with somebody who lived there. Make of that what you will, but these are the kind of strange sort of little nuances that kept cropping up within the reports, which is why I felt compelled to keep investigating them.
Great.
Yeah, that's because how do you explain that? It's like, you know, when you have the scientific evidence and they're going, well, gee, it's like this is, you know, somebody from, you know, this area would have been this, and it's like, and this is not, and it's not consistent. I mean, did they do any kind of, like, you know, DNA testing? Did they, you know, give any other, you know, like, I don't know, maybe not toxicology reports, but, you know, like things like that where they compared, you know, ratios, you know, hemoglobin, anything like that? Did any of that kind of stuff come out?
Well, this is the other thing is every which way you go, and I mean every which way you go, there are walls that mysteriously appear. So, for example, when you talk to the gendarme in Paris, you know, if you touch on the subject of the Eiffel Tower, it's a very closed shop. People don't want to talk about it. If you talk to people at the hospital, for example, yes, the hospital exists, the morgue exists, but you can't get any further. You know, every which way you go, there are walls. And, I mean, the same thing with Mark Collins, you know, a man who spent the best part of 12 months writing not an insignificant amount of reports about these incidents, and who was quite verbal about everything. All of a sudden, the minute I sort of appear and ask a question, he decides to,
it's,
you know,
like,
claim with the Fifth Amendment over there. Go silent.
Right. It's like, was he allowed to talk to us? It's like, I don't think so.
Well,
wow.
I released this book, and I released it probably without his blessing, and I tried to keep him in the loop and tried everything I could,
right,
and got absolutely nowhere with him.
Oh, no. Wow.
So I released it anyway.
Right. Yeah, because that's the thing is, you know, yeah, it's like some information gets, you know, people go, well, they kind of wait, you know, for somebody else to, you know, step up and do something else, and all of a sudden it's like, well, gee, it just never came out, did it? You know, because it was just either maybe not suppressed, but, you know, it's just people go, well, was I supposed to release this or not? It's like, we're glad you, you know, you went ahead and released it. That was cool.
This is it. And to this day, I've had no contact from him.
Wow.
Interesting.
So he literally had no idea where he lived or anything, and he just, like, disappeared off the planet.
We have a general idea. To be honest with you, there was a website called Volo Legal, which was a website set up for the legal profession in the UK, and he allegedly wrote for that. That website exists. It's still online. They have had no physical contact with him. Everything they did was via email. We have had other snippets of him allegedly being in Manchester, but nobody can put any sort of concrete evidence to support what he does or where he does it. He claims to have been a journalist. You know, but again, the thing about this whole thing is that there's quite a lot of what I would consider, you know, grey area. There's quite a lot of loose ends that can't be tied up, which is why I always put in the book, you know, fact or fiction. Is this a great internet hoax, or is this a cover-up? Is there something else behind this that I'm missing as a writer that is perhaps slightly more overtly sinister? Or am I reading
it
wrong? Is it a complete and utter, you know, viral marketing campaign, for example? And that's probably what I found so fascinating when I wrote the book.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. That makes a lot of sense. Wow. Interesting. All those questions. It's like, yeah, and you can't go back to the sources, you know, you can't get a hold of the source. It's like, you know, it's like, what do you do? It's like you kind of go, well, here's what we got, here's what it is. I mean, how can somebody disappear like that unless, I guess in American terms it would be, the Chicago mob used to give people cement shoes and give them, you know, a long walk on a short pier. You know, it's like, did something like, you know, that happen to him? Did some foul play occur, or, you know, or was he a real person? Or it's like, you know, how do you know? How do you find out?
Well, yes. And I mean, you know, there was talk in the reports that this was a huge scam for the wholesale or the selling of alien artifacts, i.e. artifacts that could be genuinely verified as if they're from ETs. And apparently there is a big business in this. You know, so that was one of the alleged reasons. Another one was it was an insurance scam. And over here in this country, you know, road traffic accident insurance cams are quite high up on the list. Well, I discounted that. There was nothing that would substantiate that.
Right.
I don't know anyone who's selling alien artifacts, so that one was difficult to verify.
Right.
But it is believable, of course, because people
like Roswell. That sounds like this country over here. It's like, you know, they've got those little shops and stuff and, you know, devoted to, you know, the stretch of road, whatever, and they do have gift shops that, you know, boast alien artifacts over here, so wow.
Well, yes, of course, the thing about that as well is that, you know, people will pay $100,000 for a piece of moon rock.
Right.
You know, and the rest, and there is a black market for moon rock, of course, because they haven't actually got all of the pieces of moon rock accounted for. So there is a lot of common sense in what happens in our day-to-day lives that could be equated to what was happening in this and what could have been perpetrated. And again, that was it's a fascinating angle when you write about it.
Right. Oh, definitely. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, because then you're like, it's like, well, what kind of alien artifacts might there be out there? You know, who's the collectors? I mean, obviously, this, you know, this has to be, you know, when you're saying there's hundreds of thousands of dollars, it's like, this has to be people who, A, believe in it, and, B, have that kind of money to spend. It's like, oh, my goodness. I wouldn't have thought that there was, you know, that kind of market there for that.
Well,
wow.
I looked at Area 51. Sasquatch, Bermuda Triangle, you know, these are huge multi-million dollar industries.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Yeah, absolutely massive. Whether they're true or not, nobody can verify. It was interesting, about a month ago, there was a report in the UK that suggested that the Loch Ness Monster in Scotland may have actually been created by Loch Ness for them to attract tourists.
Oh,
now, this wasn't some sort of Mickey Mouse tiny website. This was the BBC.
Right.
And they put a report out, and there is now a genuine belief that Loch Ness was created, or the Loch Ness Monster, for tourism. So it gives you an idea of the power of the media. And I feel that was such a relevant story when it came out.
Right.
That it sort of, you know, I mean, that's a story, by the way, that has sold probably millions of books. It spawned a couple of movies that I know of. I think there was a particularly bad one starring Ted Danson, although I don't think anyone saw that. but, you know,
the water
it just makes you wonder.
I can remember that one. Oh, my goodness. Wow.
Makes you think.
So did it spawn into another, I mean, have you... search for other UFO information, or have you done any other examinations of a UFO nature since this?
Well, to be honest, I'm looking at my next book, and I've got a subject matter in mind, actually, that I'm looking at, and it'll be along a similar line. I can't say anything yet because I'll probably get lynched by my publisher. But you know, there's a definite theme that will continue. It won't be about this particular subject because I believe I've probably touched on everything I can at the moment. But the next subject matter will delve more into conspiracy, more into stories about UFOs, because it does fascinate me. I have to say, I have become hooked on the subject matter. And I'm equally hooked by the what could be potentially real and what could be potentially absolute nonsense. I believe that, you know, there's some tremendously interesting, you know, stories out there. I don't know if you've heard of the Todd Morden case in the UK from about 40 years ago. You know, that was a very fascinating case where, you know, a body was found on the top of a coal pit. And the substance that was on that body, they have been unable to identify. They have absolutely no idea why the victim was there. You know, and that is a case that is, you know, it's not very well reported, actually. And I touch on it in my book because it interests me that such a a huge piece of evidence that could potentially suggest that there is, you know, otherworldly life making contact with us has almost slipped past.
Wow, that is really interesting. The stuff they can't explain, it's like they just kind of ignore.
Yeah, well, I don't know whether they've ignored it as such as they don't. The problem is they have no explanation. Now, of course, things where they are genuinely quite frightening probably get pushed a little bit under the carpet, as they say. But this particular case, you know, I mean, there was a sighting by a policeman. And then I believe on that same evening a body was found. They initially thought it was suicide, and they said there's no reason, there's no motive. But they identified on the back of his neck a substance that they just simply don't know what it is.
Wow. Nothing we found on this planet. We don't know how, you know, how do you classify that? Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, and that is not even a classified report. You can go onto the internet. You can read about it. It'll talk about it in quite, you know, there's a lot of detail about it. And, you know, I mean, these cases are real.
Wow.
Awesome. Okay, well, you know, Colin, I was hoping maybe we could bring some of the guests on and see if they had any questions for you about the incident. Is that okay?
Yes, of course, yeah.
Awesome. So we've got first caller is going to be 512.
This is Gary Wimmer.
Oh, there you are. Why did I have you on yet? Oh, nope. Well, isn't that odd? It's nice to see you, Gary. I'm so happy to have you.
Thank you. Very interesting information. I have a lot of feelings about UFOs and so forth. True, not true. Well, let's look at one thing that's pretty factual. Other race of beings could get here unless they knew how to move fast through time and space. So they're obviously some manifestation of energy that we don't quite understand. Do I believe in UFOs? Yeah, I believe in everything. I believe there's manifestations of so many different things in our world that we just simply don't understand. There's certainly a lot of stuff that's not really UFO-related that gets a lot of hype and so forth. Where you draw the line between the real and the factual, that is a difficult task because we don't have methods of proof or much less understanding. But, yes, I do believe there's contact with higher intelligence with human beings and have left trails, hints, whether it's the building of ancient monuments, you know, or the things your guest was discussing. The fact that they'd have to travel faster than we can imagine implies, at least to me, that they're certainly from a higher consciousness or a higher level, a higher industrialization or whatever. And they may even exist in a different dimension because there's certainly more dimensions than we see. We see time, we see three and four time, you know. So there is some sort of perhaps way they come from a different dimension and enter into our dimension, maybe when they want to contact people or do things or check on things. It's certainly a field that deserves a lot of study, but is very, at this point, with our technology and our method of research, we're just starting to understand what this could be, what the UFOs could be, what the intelligence could be, where they're from, if they're similar, if they're all over. So I could go on and on about that, because I do believe there's a lot of higher consciousness watching this planet. Most of it does not manifest in any physical form. It is there. Some of it does, and that's what our UFOs and a lot of paranormal experiences, and certainly beings could have come down here thousands of years ago to help people build pyramids and so forth. So it is a hard fact and fiction is an interesting point. It's hard to divide that line with our present methods of proof and validation. End of point.
No doubt.
That is very well put, and I believe this is, you know, again, what we've touched on extensively in the book. The case in point, by the way, is I've just looked up here. Zygmunt Adamski was the Polish-born worker who was found with the substance on the back of his neck in Todmorden in England, and that, You know, and no disrespect to Area 51, because there's a lot of talk about what went on there and what's happened there. There's a lot of talk about it being military. The striking thing about the case in Todd Morden, I think, was the complete lack of any form of talk up from the military or any denial. In fact, to be perfectly honest with you, it was completely the opposite. They had no idea, and they were very candid about it. And I think more than anything, that would sort of, you know, validate what Gary's saying, in as much that there is such little that we know currently about what goes on beyond our little planet. And, you know, this Zygmunt Adamski case probably proves that more than anything, in the most smallest way. You know, a tiny bit of material that they can't identify on the back of his neck. You know, no big discs or anything like that, just a tiny piece of material that they have no idea of identifying, was one of the big significant points about that particular case.
And I'd like to add something, if I could, Colin. I had, as both our hosts know, I had a near-death experience in 1970. I wrote a book called A Second Eternity about it. In that experience, for what seemed like an eternity, in one hand, but it was only a couple seconds of Earth time, I went from a car crash, being hit by a car as a pedestrian, to out there to the universal infinite mind and back. And in that process, I realized that the number of dimensions that exist, the number of possibilities that exist, is unfathomable. It's basically infinite. And we, being stuck in time and space with our, you know, we're pretty smart, but we only have limited knowledge of other dimensions. We're just now starting to understand it. That experience I went through basically in 1977 explained to me that everything is possible, you know. And where you guys provide that kind of, from everything possible to a certain manifestation or event at a certain time, that's a real art. That's a challenge ahead of us, both technology, understanding, scientific proof, validation, all that sort of thing. But infinite dimensions, and we see three of them. There's infinite universes, and we see this one. You know, there's infinite possibilities, and we see the handfuls that we see. So if anything could come out of this, it should stimulate interest in people about things beyond their own little world, basically. Until we get the clear answers, which is going to be an ongoing process as long as human beings exist.
Well, for sure. And another area I looked at was Michio Kaku's multiverse theory, which is very interesting.
I absolutely believe it. In my experience, I really saw, for a split second of Earth time, multi-universes, infinite possibilities. And to come down to Earth as one particular self at one particular time, as a lot of people have had those experiences, they go, wow, now I'm back in the... realize how limited I am. But from the perspective beyond this one, yeah, there's so many possibilities, and not just possibilities, manifestations, that things actually do happen. You know,
yeah.
There is transmission from one dimension to another, whole spheres of thinking that are beyond ours. But I do believe in general that it takes higher consciousness to be in that. You're not some sort of enemy that's going to take over the world. You don't have that concept of power when you get into higher levels of consciousness. You don't have any reason to wipe people out, so to speak.
if you get the time, check out Michio Kaku's multiverse theorem, and that is in the book, and Ronald Mallett, two American-based scientists who both have strong theories, not beliefs, but theories, about time travel and the space-time continuum, really, as you put it. I think you'll find them very interesting.
I will, because I'm very interested in that. The quantum level, the macro level, micro level, you know, there's so much.
Well, Michio Kaku's got a video on YouTube, and I think one of the opening statements is, you know, is it possible that one of your own relatives has traveled back in time to visit you? And he said, of course it's entirely possible. Because you have to view time as a line. And I think out of all of them, and I include Ronald Mallett with this as well, they make the most sense. Because their theories are based in what we believe in scientific fact and plausibility. You know, this isn't Hollywood talking. These are very highly rated scientists,
right,
who have gone on the record to sort of stake their reputations, if you like, to discuss these two subjects. Because, you know, most scientists get laughed out of the room the minute they start
talking about
time travel. You know, it's like, well, hang on a minute, guys. You know, off you pop, go to Hollywood and write a film. But these two people have sat down and written quite extensively about the subjects. And, of course, we have our own experiments going off in Switzerland at CERN at the moment, which could throw up all sorts of possibilities.
Amen.
You know, we are...
Yeah, the more we understand those small quantum levels, the more we realize its possibilities, and the more we... as we grow and expand as a human race, we are going to go out in space. We are going to time travel. That's our next destiny. Hell, we're just figuring out how to share the water and the resources now, you know?
Absolutely. I mean,
Sandbox
Knife. Yeah, absolutely. And
we're
these are the people
the
that are breaking
we're
the new ground.
That we will be eventually higher consciousness when we're the UFOs to some other civilization.
Well, you know, and I find this interesting, too. I actually go and I visit, actually planning to do it tonight. There's a UFO... visiting by like a it's one of the top five UFO active hotspots in the United States, and I've visited there quite often as well. And it's over in Trout Lake, Washington, Gillen's Ranch, if anybody's familiar with it. Well, they have all kinds of different spiritual happenings there, but I mean, people go there pretty much to just skywatch. Now, I don't understand how people who live in the same town cannot see the same things that we see in their sky, but they totally are unopen to any kind of, you know, they just cannot see what we see. So they're actually trying to get James Gillen, the owner of this property, to stop having visitors, his friends, his supporters over there on his own property. Now, you know, why do we have this power to do this kind of thing, you know? So definitely a lot of closed minds out there, I'm sure. Is basically what I'm trying to say.
Well, I would also say that there's also a lot of fear.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Fear and closed mind. Remember, it's only 300 or 400 years ago since we accepted that the Earth is the going around the sun, you know.
Well,
but it's round,
yeah,
you know.
Precise.
We hadn't gone through thousands of years yet, which is, you know, a couple generations ago, you know. And amazing.
Actually, Gary, if you Google it, there is a Flat Earth Society. There are still some people that believe
we
live on a flat Earth. I mean, you know, it's not accepted all over yet.
And there's a lot of, unfortunately, antiquated religious beliefs that stop you from exploring your soul or the mind at other levels, and who think that, you know, out of all the possibilities of no two snowflakes alike, no two grains of sand, there's a lot of people who believe that God can only come up with two options after death: heaven or hell. I mean, give me a break.
Right.
As long as you're dealing with thinking that is that basic, that is that. How many people do you know of the religions are saying, I'm going to hell? Well, they're all going to heaven, right? I mean,
right.
So my point is, if you look at an ant and figure out how much, look at how much he knows about us, that's about how much we know about the universe. You know, we're just beginning. Just beginning.
All right, let's try and break some of these callers in, if we could. We're going to start with 661. 661, do you hear us?
That's probably
John Scott.
But
so
cancel out.
I got you. That makes sense. All right, let's jump over, Gary. I'm hitting you on all levels today. You and me. We definitely got a connection. All right, so 289. 289, you're on the line with us. Do you have a question for Colin? I'm thinking not.
Maybe he's been kidnapped.
Maybe, you know, there were some things that came missing up on that highway, I hear.
Maybe 289 got zapped up.
Maybe. Well, you know, Colin, I was looking at your information. There were some cars that
went up in flame, and the just people were just not found inside those cars. That's correct, right?
Yeah, that's correct. The first three vehicles on the M6, there was allegedly no sign of any body tissue that would be conducive to or consistent with their being involved in an accident. So there was no blood, no skin samples or anything, just missing people. And the what they call the tachymeter on the truck just didn't show any signs of any evasive action. So no braking nor revving or anything. It was just as if they were there 1 second and then gone the next. And that is, you know, one of the enduring mysteries surrounding this is what actually happened to these people.
I was going to say, is the Star Trek teleporter real? Did the mothership, so to speak, teleport them out of their vehicles, and then their vehicles were just unmanned careening down the highway? It's like, that's a good question.
Well, that is effectively what happened. They were unmanned. There was nobody there driving them, hence the crash. This is what I said, the more you look at it, the more you read about it, the more to create it, to actually make this up from scratch would take such a huge amount of imagination that it almost doesn't bear thinking, because here we have bright lights, here we have people disappearing, we have, you know, people on grass verges, and we have lines of fire on the motorway. Yeah, this is the stuff of, you know, the film, but there is no film. And that perhaps is the most enduring thing.
How has this changed your perception of maybe the UFO topic since you started this?
Well, like I say, the Todd Morden case to me is the most fascinating, because out of all the big conspiracy stories, and, you know, Area 51 being probably the biggest, this one strikes me as the most, the one that you can touch, the one that you can reach out and say an authority or a government has actually turned around and said, we actually don't know what this is. And I think that's fairly significant. You know, when you know, people within authority have said, we hold up our hands, we actually don't know what's in this substance, I think then you have a story. And I think out of anything that I've researched up until now, and I know there's Eric von Daniken's book, there's a talk about the pyramids, you know, when you look at the statues that von Daniken highlights out in his book, it is very plausible, but that's all it is. It's plausible. There's a certain plausibility about the fact that some of these statues look like they're from space, and how on earth would a Mayan have been able to have created that? What's different with Todd Morden and Adamski is that here is somebody with physical evidence that proves beyond doubt that there is something there that we have no idea about in terms of identifying the nature of the substance. And like I say, it's the smallest piece of evidence probably in all of these UFO stories. There's no big lights, there's no big ship. There is talk of an abduction. Alan Godfrey, the policeman involved in the incident, I believe earlier that day or the day before, talks about being abducted. Fair enough. We don't know whether his story is right or wrong. He's sketched out his ship. But beyond anything like that, we have a body with something on it that we can't identify. And I think out of all the physical evidence and the probably millions of pages of stories published about the sightings of UFOs, that to me is probably one of the most conclusive to say we have something here. We simply do not know what it is.
And, you know, we don't even exactly know how the pyramids were built. I'm a follower of Edgar Cayce, and I believe that perhaps some of the Atlantean souls, the early souls on Earth, evolved to the point they can now come back as UFOs. They can manifest maybe through mental imagination some sort of ship that can do things and make it manifest because people could either be fascinated by it, curious about it, or relate to it. Because I feel like if the UFOs and the spirits from wherever didn't exist, or didn't ever make themselves obvious, we wouldn't even look at them. We wouldn't know. We wouldn't have any curiosity. So there's some sort of, like I said, leaving hints about things, whether they're from one place or a thousand different places, whether it's one role, one race, or hundreds of different manifestations from different zones, dimensions, and so forth. We don't know. But we do know that there's a lot of things we can't understand and that don't make sense by our current theories. So, yeah, the more we look, the better we'll, the more we will learn.
Absolutely.
Yeah, no, for sure. Absolutely. Absolutely.
I like to think that what would happen if they made themselves known, like absolutely unquestionably known, what the society would do?
Well, it's probably to who they would make themselves known. If everybody on the earth saw it, or a whole country, yeah, if two people or five people out camping, we've got so many experiences like that that, you know, nobody can prove, nobody can disprove. So it really depends on how much and to what degree and how they show themselves, you know. And I've often thought, yeah, that'd be the way to get everybody's attention, as, you know, present yourself to the whole world simultaneously. But whether they would want to do that, or whether that would be possible in their technology or mindset, is another concern, another question.
Right.
Because you rest assured there's some sort of free will from these beings to present themselves. It's not an accident. There's some sort of choice to present themselves on Earth, or to create curiosity on Earth, or to leave trails, like, you know, stuff in the South America and the pyramids. And again, they're not all necessarily the same consciousness, maybe different levels of consciousness for different times. That's sort of what I believe.
Well, you know, when I was at that sanctuary I was telling you about, I witnessed two UFOs. And by UFOs, I mean unidentified flying objects. I couldn't see what they were, couldn't tell what they were, but it was dark outside, and I saw these little star-like lights up in the sky, and they were chasing each other around in circles. Now, I mean, you tell me what that is. You can be skeptic all you want. I just want to know what that was. It was unidentified. It was flying. It was an object of some sort. Obviously, in some kind of, you know, intelligent track in the sky, just tell me what it is. If you don't want to believe that it, you know, there's other life, just explain to me what that is.
You know, psychically, what I pick up a lot, Sean and Colin, is what I was explaining a while ago. There are different dimensions. There are different places. Physical, mental, and spiritual, maybe that beings manifest, consciousness manifests, and they can come into our dimension. Exactly which one you experience, Colin, or see, or Seth, is it's hard to pin a name on them. Hell, if I could be that accurate, I'd get the damn lottery numbers right. We don't get everything.
Nice,
yeah, we
don't get the lottery numbers right.
Yeah, right. We don't get everything that we seek and want to know. But I've had experiences both in doing readings and in my own life where I've felt things from a completely different dimension. I know I've done readings for people and told them, and I feel this, that they're from a completely different universe. You know, they've experienced some things here and come into this universe. And this, our planet is unique. Not all planets are going to be oxygen, carbon-based, you know, in the habitable zone.
Right.
That's only if you're going to have plants and animals and people, but they may live in a higher consciousness where they don't have to have bodies, but still may hover around a certain planet for cohesiveness or consciousness. All sorts of possibilities that we can't fathom right now. But as I was saying, to look, to explore, to have curiosity, that's the only way we grow and learn. So it's healthy to have that. We'll all find out more eventually. But there'll still be more mysteries in the universe, always will be, and that's good. That's a good thing, as Martha would say.
Well, you know, and I like to say, if you don't look up, you'll never know. So, you know, you got to open your eyes to what's around, just to question.
Amen. Amen.
Yeah. Maybe I missed this at the first. I was kind of curious, how can people get a hold of Colin? It's like, does he have a website, email? It's like, how can people get a hold of him or get a hold of his book?
If you type in Colin Hall fact or fiction, the Paris M6 crashes, it'll come up everywhere. I have a WordPress site, which is m6paranormalcrash.wordpress.com, I think it is, and you'll be able to get a hold of me on there. So I'm very easy to find, very easy to find. And I'm always open to questions.
Awesome. We're getting down to the last couple of minutes, but I wanted to see if we could try one more person. In the meantime, I just want to say thank you so much for coming in, Colin, and
no worries at all. My battery is about to get the better of me.
Uh-oh.
On my phone. I'm more than happy to ring you back in a couple of minutes for that caller. If that's all right, let me just recharge my phone. I don't want to die halfway through the call.
Oh, yeah, no worries. For sure. We would definitely welcome you back. Well, thank you so much.
I will be literally about 4 minutes. Let me just get some gas in this phone before it dies. I won't be long.
Well, let's go ahead and open up the line. Anyway, we get some topic conversation. Too late now.
I'm on the line. I won't be long.
Okay.
All right.
289, you there?
I'll be back in a sec. All right.
All righty. 289. Call 289. Well, you know, sometimes people are on. You know, they'll mute their phones, or you know, they get. I've heard the experience where somebody says, "Oh yeah, I had this at the call come in, and I just like switch lines." It's like sometimes we get people who listen in who are listening to us, but it's like. Yeah, they get, something else happens, and they go, yeah, it's like, I was listening, it's like, I got distracted.
Yeah, if you don't have questions, though, they can always hit that one button, hit the number one button and take that question up.
You're right. Yeah, we discovered that. Yeah, you can hit that number one, it's like, and take that question mark off, the raise the hand moment off. Looks like there is a 770 number on there.
Try that, 770, oh. You are on the line. Hello.
Oh, wow. How you doing?
Great.
How are you guys doing? Hello?
Hello. Can we get you
Can you hear me well?
Yeah,
can
we
you
can
hear
me?
You.
Can you hear me?
Okay. Who's on today?
Well, we had...
I just tuned in. That's why I said, wow, I was surprised that I was called because I didn't think it was going to happen.
Oh, no, we had Colin Hall on, and he was talking M6 and Paris UFO crash conspiracy. Did you have a question, or did you have a comment?
So no reading during today?
Oh, we can do some reading, too. Did you want to get a reading?
Yeah, just in general, what do you see, just in general. I didn't catch who was on, though.
Oh, we got Gary Wimmer. Would you like to do that, Gary?
Sure. I'll give you a general reading. This is just for your listeners. This is my name is Gary Wimmer. What I do is called lithomancy. You can find out a lot about it by just Googling GaryWimmer.com, GaryWimmer.com, or Gary Wimmer, or Gary Wimmer Psychic. This method is very interesting. I learned it 30 years ago. It involves 16 stones, Sun through Pluto, and then 6 on life. And as I'm talking, I'm charging them up. And in just a moment, I will have your caller say drop. And when she says drop, I drop him into this circle. And I read them like a clock for around from 12 o'clock back to 12 o'clock for so it covers 12 weeks. And caller, if you're listening, if you can hear me, they are charged up. So
okay.
All you have to do whenever it feels right is just say drop. And then I'll tell you what I'll see for the next couple months, okay?
Drop.
Okay, girl. Well, you are going through a lot of changes right now, probably some certain things about relationships, but you've got a lot of power coming into play here. You've got the Sunstone and Mars coming into play in the first week as well as Saturn. So there's going to be a lot of restructuring, a lot of organization here in the first week or so that's going to help you move forward. So don't worry about the confusion you might feel in things. It's giving you a lot of new ways to look at things, ways to expand and
ways where you feel things with men or work or activity, you can start dealing with them in a different way. So there's
okay.
a lot of organization, and there's a lot of fresh ways of working around obstacles, seeing things, empowering yourself, and so forth in the first week. And now by the second week and into the third week, I'm hearing a little echo, so I'll kind of wait till it stops before I keep talking. But by the second week and into the third week, you feel much more emotionally empowered around your environment. You're making a lot of good success about where you want to go in life. It's going to eventually help you a lot with both relationships and love. So that's kind of why you're having this whole fresh change of both attitude and where to move forward. Because by the fourth and fifth week here, things about your place, both work and home, you feel real strong about. And it's because you're starting to look at things completely differently in the first week and a half to two. So don't be afraid to explore your possibilities. At the same time, you're having to deal with a lot of responsibilities and get organization. But it feels like you're getting both. You're getting the organization and the flexibility part in your life. Such that, like I said, the moon in the second and third week shows a lot of balance around environments. The fourth week shows a lot of things around place where you have really got a fresh sense of commitment about it, both business things and the control over your place, feeling good about it, feeling positive. And by the fifth and sixth and seventh week here, you've got Jupiter, Neptune, the Lux Stone, and so forth. So you're really opening up a lot of positivity and creativity, fresh visions for yourself, a lot of luck, a lot of moving forward, that by the end of this three-month period with the Magic Stone, you're going to be lined up probably better than you've been for a while. And that's leading you not only to good love in the future, it's leading to you to make very good decisions about where you want to go and so forth. It's helping you make like long-term decisions in your life, whereas right now it may be just kind of figuring out what the next decisions are. But past this, beyond this three-month period, you're making a lot of decisions about the long-term in your life. And that's going to help with two areas. It's going to empower you for healing issues in the future that you're going to have to exercise, whether it's parents or friends. You're learning a lot about your own ability to see things a different way, and you can help other people. Does that make sense to you, girl?
It surely does.
Well, it's supposed to.
It surely does. My heart is singing. My heart is singing.
Yeah, so don't worry about the confusion you feel right now. Let it empower you. You're going through a lot of creative energy right now, so you can find out what to hold on to, what to let go of, what to work on, and how to bypass complex issues without feeling like you have to drain yourself. In fact, if anything, you're getting power to go to make your way around obstacles better than you have in the past. So feel empowered, girl, not threatened.
Thank you.
You too. Have a good evening.
Thank you. Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, sweetheart.
All right. So I'm just trying to clear a little bit of confusion with our dear Camille. She is, there's a little confusion about what time, so I'm hoping to get her on here very quickly. So I'm going to bring in the next caller while we get that ironed out. Is that okay? Yes. Let's go. 289, right? 289, are you there? Okay, one more time. 289, are you there? Okay.
So let's go. Back in the queue.
Right back to queue, yeah. I got it looks like a Skype number, 445 number. Are you there, 445?
Hello.
Hello. And yes, caller, 445. You might be. Are you using Skype to call in? All right. So I'm going to go back to the queue for that one. And Mary Lou. What's that?
So did we lose that Skype caller?
One of them might have been me. I was calling on Skype at the same time as my phone. Wasn't sure which one you folks were going to grab. So I just disconnected have disconnected my Skype phone.
Okay. I had you on 661, so yeah,
right.
I knew who you were. I almost think that might have been Colin.
I'm here.
Is that you, Colin?
It is. It's me.
Oh, all right.
Ah.
All right.
I'm back.
Welcome back. Welcome back.
Hey, let me give Colin a read.
Yeah, it was for a reading, but thank you so much for calling back in.
It's okay. Sorry about that. I was just trying to put a little bit more power into my phone, so we've got at least a few more minutes.
Alrighty.
No matter how much we travel the universe in UFOs, batteries will always be the death of us. Amen.
I thought they were solar charged.
You try living in the UK. The last time I saw the sun was last year.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, that cloudy.
Yes. Not the best.
Wow.
All right.
Well, Colin, come here one summer in Texas, and you'll find more sun than you want. Trust me.
I believe
so. Tornadoes.
There are rumors.
Oh, we get a lot in the summer. Non-stop. So it's up to you, hosts. Y'all are running it.
We just get a lot of rain here, you know. This is Gotham City up here in the Pacific Northwest.
You see, well, we're in the Northwest as well, so we have the same problem.
Right. All right. I just brought in Mary Lou Who, it looks like. Are you there?
Hi. I'm here.
Hi. Do you have a question?
No, I'm really interested in past life and healing some past life issues and healing karmic ties. But any message from spirit, fine with me. I'm easy to get along with.
Can I throw something in?
Yes, certainly.
Yes, please do, Gary.
Let her just say drop when you want, and I'll kind of look, rather than looking at, I'll look at this 3 months, but also look at why you have these feelings about past lives, and I'll use 13 stones. I'm just going to kind of change the direction of the reading in one way, because that was your question. So just say drop whenever you want to, and I'll see a pattern with these stones, and I'll start telling you what I feel, okay?
Okay, drop.
Okay. Well, yeah, it did come up. You're looking at a lot of things in the past. Pluto represents that. You know what I think you're learning? I think you're learning to live in the present and not worry about that, because there's so many things in the past, whether it's a past life or 5 minutes ago we made a bad decision, we can't affect. It's written. It's done. So the main thing I suggest to you and to everybody is to not try to put too much emphasis on what the past is, how it's cornered you in or hemmed you in or stopped you or prevented you, because from my own experience, I know I spent 35, 40 years wondering why the past, blah, blah, blah. And the lady who taught me lithomancy kept telling me for years, you know, well, Gary, only think about the present and the future, because that's what's going on. It took me 40 years to realize the power of that. And I had a feeling right when you were first talking and looking at these stones that it's a big it's almost like a challenge for you to move forward and forget about that having an effect on you. And when you do, you move forward and you kind of forget about that. You really look toward what's happening in the moment. Then you start getting your answers about why you feel this, about what it might be, about how it can help you with feelings about both relationships, people, stability, plans, love, and so forth. Because you've... things in the past are only meant to help us make the present and the future better. The universe is not picking on us or trying to torture us or anything. We do that through our own blindness, our own stupidity, our own selfishness. And sometimes we don't know we're blind. We don't maybe not know we're selfish. We may not know that we're holding on to some principle that defeats us rather than empowers us.
Okay, so say in your present moment, you have people or someone that you know in past lives, and you're trying to heal the thing that blocks you in this life that you carried over from that life. And once you're understand what it is, it's easier to break it.
Well, there's certain hints you get in your conscious mind and dreams and feelings and so forth that give you hints about the issues you need to deal with, whether they're from past lives or the moment before you or in the future. So what I'm saying is, when you feel those things that seem like they come from a past life that have to be discovered, that have to be reckoned with or dealt with, recognize that your way of dealing with them is always in the present and the future. So whether you choose to be tied down by those things you can't explain or liberated from them is your choice at the moment.
Right.
And when you choose to be liberated from them, at least at that moment, maybe for that day, if you're working real hard on some project, whether you're a scientist or a writer or an athlete, you're working real hard, you have to take a break from it and come back the next day, and you come back more enthused. Your muscles have relaxed, your brain's process this information. So I suggest the same tactic to you, because it feels like you put too much emphasis on past things that you can't change rather than the present ability to change them. And that's what it really boils down to. Right now, I see in the next couple of weeks, if you really investigate that premise, just try it. Investigate the idea of, you know what, I don't care what it is in the past life because I'm going to deal with this present. Then you're lifting all fears about it constricting you, having undue influence on you, you being chained to the past, or you having to refer to the past to make sense of the present and the future. Make sense of the present and the future as it stands before you right now, and reason what you feel about the past, how you feel you've been chained, or that sort of thing. Or whatever the problems are, they'll become clear as soon as you let go of it. As soon as you let go, you're trying to write something. As soon as you let go, it relaxes overnight. The next day you go, oh, I got an idea. I mean, cycles are like that. So shift your cycle away from this just long enough for you to realize that the way you deal with it is in the present and in the future and in the moment, not in the past. So use that moment to not be haunted by it. Then you're empowered by it. Then you can start letting it heal you about your fears and so forth. That's what I'm feeling. Does that make sense to you, girl?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really what I feel, because you got so much moving forward for you once you get through this blockage of being tied to the past. You know, you've got good things about your emotions, good things about your environment, about business. All this is coming through. And certainly by the end of this three-month period, it's going to affect you in a lot of ways about love. And somehow you feel like love has been screwing you because of things in the past. And I'm saying that's only one way to look at it. How about it's empowering you because of things in the past? How about you learn things and go, okay, if this is my fear, I'm going to get over that and drop it or work through it. Don't let your fears and your doubts haunt you. Let them empower you. And so if this gets to be too complicated or heavy, or you feel like you're being victimized by things in the past you don't have any control over, which you don't, let go of them. And then they'll come back and they'll come in form of what you do have control over right now to make those things insignificant.
Well, I'm sort of hoping to document the story, prove the story, and publish the story.
Good, because you've got a lot of, you've got the luck stuff right next to Mercury, which is communication. Certainly investigate that, but take away your own doubts about it. If you're going to explore. This is a good time for you to do that because it is on your mind. But on a personal level, don't be haunted. On a professional level for writing, dig into it full blast, yes. Just like Colin was digging into his research.
So basically I was trying to see if you were picking up anything that would help me explore.
Well, there's so many things that come up in past lives with people, and they come up with the thing I feel like it's dealing with you a lot is in relationships.
Well, I'm looking at one particular story, and I have it fairly well documented, but I'm missing pieces. So I'm kind of looking to get the missing puzzle piece.
Missing pieces, you said?
Yeah. I mean, it's really well documented, but there are some pieces missing that I want to
I feel like there's
out there that I want to have come into documentation.
All right, some pieces are going to be missing because they're not around to be grabbed. What I feel is there's either people you've talked to or things you've looked at in the past that have a little more information. You might have looked over something. You might have overlooked it. They have a little more information. They may not add the missing pieces, but they'll show you maybe why they're missing, you know, or give you some room to interpolate from what you don't know to what could be a possibility. So some things that are missing are meant to be that way, and they're going to stay that way. But you, from past research, from past people you've talked to, there's other information you can go over, and it's almost like it hits you intuitively.
One person had money, so they left a lot of documentation. They were written about newspapers. I mean, newspapers is documentation. But when it comes to people with less money, it's hard to find that they existed, you know? It's hard to figure out their last name.
Well, it feels like you're getting a lot of boost in your thing about research as soon as you sort of let go of the stress factor about it. That's what I was feeling, the stress factor. Your goals, your interests are very good. Every time you feel some sort of stress about it, let yourself know that that's not going to help. What's going to help is getting over the stress or looking back through the research or shifting your focus. You have a lot of you're in a very lucky cycle right now as far as making a lot of breakthroughs in this. And within about 2 or 3 weeks, you're going to have a lot more information than you realize. There's certain things that are coming to you from not only known quarters, but your own psychic ability, your own intuitive ability. You're going to be able to make some sort of discoveries. You may not be able to document those and prove them, but they might show you where to get more documentation. That's what I'm feeling. Pay attention to your dreams and almost program yourself, whether in a dream state or in a normal state, to find this information, to have it presented to you. And I want to say something real quick. About 2 years ago, I learned this about 2 years ago. I constantly misplace my keys or my wallet or something. And one time after misplacing my keys, I do what everybody does, go through all the drawers and then get mad and go through them again and then get mad. And finally I thought, you know what? That's not a constructive way to do it. I'm going to have my keys find me. And I kept thinking that. And the next day, every time I think about my keys, I'd say, find me. I'm not going to search the house. Find me. And either I programmed my brain into bringing me back where I put them, or they were drawn to me. But I use that system a lot now. When I misplace something, when I look at something, I tell it to find me. Think about that. Apply that, because that'll pull you into places you can find this information. Rather than being upset about not having it, put yourself in the situation of let it pull you toward it. It actually will work. Try it. You got nothing to lose.
Okay.
That makes sense?
Okay, Gary. Thank you so much, Mary Lou. Give us a call. Let us know how everything goes, okay? Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.
All right. Now, we have our very special guest, Camille, who, you know, Camille is having a rough go of it because, you know, I had a little misunderstanding as far as the dates and time of this. So, Camille, I'm very sorry for all our confusion, and I hope that we can get the energy flowing in the right direction. How are you doing today?
I'm good, and yourself?
Oh, I'm so good to hear your voice right now.
No, that's okay.
All right. So can you tell us a little bit about yourself? You know, kind of what you do and how we can get a hold of you.
Okay, I am a natural healer. I heal with energy that's born into me, and I'm a psychic medium. My gifts are through my lineage. I've never been taught through a book or media. My ancestors did what I do. So I have a website, and I have a new one under construction. The current one is CelticCammy.org, and the new one will be CelticCammy.com. It tells you more of what I do. I do past life regression. I do readings, I do healings, I do cleansings. I do many different forms of healings. And as I said, I was born into it. I grew up with it. From the age of 3, I first interacted with spirit. And spirit is always around me. And I believe that we need to follow what our guides tell us, because we always get useful information from them. And when I do a reading, I cannot tell you what you want to hear, because I can only tell you what spirit tells me or what my guides tell me. It's not a question of giving someone a nice sugar-coated reading, because that is not helpful at all. You need to tell the truth as you see it. So I'm not sure what else you want to know.
No, that's perfect. That's good. You know, we have your website, and you have another website that's going to go up soon too, right? About how long?
Yeah, and I have a healing page, a Facebook healing page called Camille Natural Healer and Psychic Medium as well.
Okay, let's get that up for our listeners. So I would like to go ahead and break this into our first caller, and that's to let any more time be taken from you, Camille. I'm so sorry.
No, it's okay. It's quite understandable.
617, do you want to introduce yourself to Camille?
Oh, hi, Seth. It's Colin. Did you still want me? Sorry.
Oh, well, it's nice to have you. I'm very happy to introduce you to Camille, if you'd like to get a reading. But I don't think we have any more callers for the UFO topic.
Brilliant.
Did you want to stick
look, can I just say thank you so much for having me on the show? Thanks to you and to Kelly. It's 9:30 over here at night, so I'm going to go and enjoy a beer now.
Oh my goodness!
I'm probably sit down and watch a movie or two. Any questions, any time, just drop me a line. More than happy to come back. And thank you so much for having me on the show.
Oh,
enjoyed your
experience. Oh, I will see you. I will talk to you soon, and have a great day.
All right, and you too.
All right, cheers. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
All right. All right. How about 403? Nope, that's you.
That's me.
Hi, Camille. So happy.
We've had 289 waiting for quite a long time. Let's try that one. 289, you are on the line.
Hello?
Hello, 289. Hello, 289. Can you introduce yourself to Camille?
I think they're having phone problems. 289 has we've had them on and off, and it's like I'm not sure. Maybe their phone is on mute because we can't hear them yet. They're 617 though.
617 was.
Can you hear me?
Hello.
There we go. Okay.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Yeah. How
and
you
how
doing?
Can I?
Hello?
Hello?
Yes, ma'am. How you doing?
I'm good. And you?
I'm okay, I guess.
So how can I help you today?
I want to know if my, the guy I'm with, name is O, Mitchell O. I want to know, is he cheating on me?
Okay. I will ask my guides that. All right, your answer is, you asked, is he cheating on you? Physically, he's not cheating on you. He does talk to other people, but he's not cheating on you physically.
But he does be with them, socialize with them, hang out with them.
Yeah, but he doesn't physically cheat on you, no.
Also, he's not sleeping around on me?
No, he's not sleeping around on you, no.
Oh, okay, so... He only wants
he me. Does. He socializes with other people, but he doesn't physically cheat on you.
Oh, because I know, because I see women be calling his phone like 2 and 3 in the morning.
Yeah, he just socializes. I do see him socializing with women, but I do not see him physically being with another woman.
So is another woman trying to get next to him, though?
Yes, there's someone who's trying very hard to get around him, but he's resisting.
Oh, but
He is resisting.
And it's somebody that the family likes, right?
That his family likes. Is that your question? Do you want to know if his family likes her?
Yes. See, I know they don't like me. That's why I wonder if they like her.
I would not say they like her. I would not say that. No. No. It's just someone he knows. It's not someone connected to his family or even knows his family. It's just someone that he knows.
And they're trying to be with him too. But he's not going for it.
He's not going for it. Not at all.
So I have nothing to worry about. He's all mine.
You don't have anything to worry about. You just need to trust.
Oh, okay.
That's your thing. You need to trust.
Okay, because I've been having dying attacks and stuff. I've been panicking. My stomach been hurting. I've been worrying too much. That's what it is. Huh?
Yeah, the thing is when we doubt and that we bring that negative part into our lives. So you don't want to do that. You just need to trust because there's really no physical relationship there.
Okay, that's good to know. That's a relief off my heart, off my chest. You just don't know.
Yeah, well, that's good. But you just need to trust and you need to believe because if you're going to doubt it, it's not going to work. You really need to believe in it.
And just have faith and trust him and make the relationship grow.
Yes, that's what you have to do.
Okay. That's how I'm going to start doing.
Yeah, that's what you need to do. Because the more you trust, the better you're going to make it. When you bring doubt and negative energy around a relationship, it cannot work. And it will not work. So just believe in it and bring more positivity into it and you'll be okay. You'll have a good relationship.
Okay. What about my, you said there's wrong with my health?
I'm not a doctor. I don't normally answer medical questions. It's not really for us to answer. But right now, to be honest, I don't see anything serious around you.
That's good news. That's good news. I thought I was pregnant. That's why I was asking.
I don't see anything serious around you.
Okay. All right, then.
Okay. Have a good day.
You too. God bless you. Thank you.
You too. Bye.
Bye-bye.
And that's such good information, good advice for relationships, you know, the positivity, finding that common language to talk with your partner,
mm-hmm.
one that comes from love and positivity from all fronts, whether you're angry. And that's something that I still, you know, work with my wife about, you know, and it's important.
It is very important.
So I'm going to go, we'll bring another caller in, I guess, 717. 717, are you with us?
Hello?
Hello. All right, you know what? I think we are just struggling right now. So, Camille, you definitely are coming from... a positive, I mean, I feel your positive energy and it is very refreshing right now today. It really is. Can you kind of tell us your ideas on maybe what we as people going through the current ascension on the planet, how do we stay positive in the face of so much negativity?
Well, that is sometimes really, really hard to do. I myself feel sometimes the spirits take us to the end of our endurance with testing us, but we just have to stay positive. There's, you know, when you think there's no hope or no anything, they show you there is something. And this is what they always do through our lives. They show us there is something. And I always say we can have the exact life we want, but we only need to believe in ourselves. Because if you're going to be negative about your life, it will turn out negative. But if you can visualize your life as going well and all the positive things in your life, you will have that.
Yeah. And I believe that too. I believe that we manifest exactly what we get.
Yes, we do. Our manifestations are very important because the more we manifest on a positive plane, the more we're going to get that's positive in our lives. You know, we get sometimes tested, and especially as psychics, we get tested so much, and we have to stay positive for our clients, but we have to stay positive for ourselves. And unless we can stay positive for ourselves, we're no good to anyone, not at all.
I totally understand what you're saying. Yeah, for sure. I'm gonna bring one of our friends on. 717. Are you there?
I'm here. How are you doing?
I'm good. And you?
I'm doing just fine.
So how can I help you?
Well, I do have a question for personal nature that I would like to ask. My husband just got a job, and he only worked for a week and is having some difficulty at this time with some paperwork and some other items that they're, how can I say, being a bit difficult, requesting some things that are out of the ordinary, and he is concerned about whether or not he will keep his job. Do you feel that, you know, the potential is there that he will remain at his job at this time?
I do get the answer he will stay at the job. I also get the thing that he's going to be filling in a great deal of paperwork, and it's going to take a lot of patience on his part. But in the end, he will get to keep his job. In fact, he will do well at the job once he's settled in. It's just a question of settling in.
Okay, very good. I understand. He's pretty much an unknown entity at this point. So in order to make everyone happy, you know, he's just got to go through these hurdles in order to get through it, to get to the good stuff.
Yeah, well, it is like that. But I do see he's going to have more paperwork to complete, and as soon as they've received everything they want from him, he's going to settle in and he's going to actually do well at it. He's going to find his niche in that place.
Wonderful. That's what I wanted to know, because he is quite concerned at this time, and I'm trying to ease his fear, but of course,
I can understand that, but what I will also tell you to try and tell him is not to think negative, because if he's going to be negative in that, in the time he is now, then he might lose his job. So he's got to stay very positive and just believe that as long as he does everything they ask of him, he will get to keep his job. I see him keeping his job, but his attitude, he needs to stay positive. I understand he's concerned, but you need to talk to him and try and get him to be a little bit more positive in what he's doing.
Okay, very good. Thank you so much. I agree with that wholeheartedly, because I do believe a positive attitude is just like you said, and that it will manifest great things in your life.
Yes, it
that
will.
Is wonderful
it, and advice. It does. It does.
I agree wholeheartedly. Thank you so much, Camille. I greatly appreciate it.
You are so welcome. Have a great day.
You too.
I have a question. If I'm allowed to ask one, it's like
Camille, do you like messages from the other side? And the reason I'm asking is most of my family, I'll say, is on the other side. It's like, do you get messages, from people on the other side?
Yes, I do. Yeah, I do.
I'll be inquisitive and say, my name is Kelly, and I'm just kind of wondering if there's anything from either, I'm not picky who, my mom, my dad, my sister, my husband.
There's an older lady. An old lady. I'm not getting a name. I'm getting more of a description. She had curlier hair.
Sounds like my grandma Dent.
She had curlier hair. She didn't call you Kelly, though.
Okay.
She called you something else. She had a pet name for you. I'm seeing an older lady with curlier hair.
Yeah, I think that would be my grandma Dent. It's like, I'm struggling to remember. It's like, I remember she did have a pet name for me. It's like, it's been so long, I'm trying to remember what it was.
Not getting Kelly when she talks to you. I'm trying to get the name. I'm not getting it right now. Sometimes it takes a while for it to come through, but I'm definitely not getting Kelly. I'm getting some other name.
Okay.
Around her. And she had curlier hair. She's been gone a very long time.
Yes.
But I can feel, what I do know, you can feel her.
Okay.
I'm sure you feel her.
I can tell when they're around, but it's like, it's my, the silent movies, how it's like, they have the silent movies used to have, they show the screen stuff and then they show the captions. Well, it's like I get silent movies without the captions. It's like I never quite know what exactly they're saying or what they're trying to get across.
It's not always easy to interpret what they're saying, even for myself. I've been doing this since, the first time I saw a spirit, I was 3 years old. I had no idea what I was seeing.
Wow.
I saw a lady with a bunch of children in the hallway of our house, and I had no idea what I was seeing, none at all. And my mother's mother explained to me what I am and et cetera. And after that, I just kept seeing them and seeing them and seeing them. And they used to appear in flesh. Now they do not appear in flesh so much anymore. The other day I was cooking, and a man, and I don't know who he is, he appeared behind me at the stove, and I jumped about 6 foot in the air because I got such a fright. He was in flesh, and I have no idea who he is, and I still don't know who he is, but he was there.
Wow.
I've always seen when someone's going to pass and things like that. I've always been able to see that since I was very small.
Wow. That's a different kind of gift. It's like I know people who actually have, I'll say, close the door on their gift because they go, it's too much pain. It's like, I don't want to know when people die. So it's like, that's really kind of a special gift, and it takes a special person to be able to handle that too.
It is. It's very hard. It's very hard. I have someone in my life now who's going to go pretty soon, and I know it, and I can see it in weeks. In almost days now, so it's difficult. But both my grandmothers were mediums.
Wow.
My mom didn't practice. My mom died when she was fairly young, so she never practiced as a medium.
Wow, my goodness.
Yeah.
So when
able to feel them, and I also feel. You possibly have something of your grandmother's.
Yeah, it's like I do. I do have several items. I mean, actually, and actually, on both sides.
It's quite strange because those that have passed on like us to remember them, and they like it when we keep something of them.
Right.
And sometimes they'll move it around if it's not in the place they want it.
We've had things like that happen. You have no idea. It's like I've attributed it to wormholes, to all kinds of things. It's like,
No. They do that.
Like,
I have a perfume bottle. It's crystal with silver lid. It belonged to my great-grandmother, my mother's mother. She was a high priestess and a very strong medium, too. My mother's grandmother. And this bottle, she likes to move it around. And it's still got her smell of her perfume in. And she's been, well, I never knew her, so it's very old.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they like moving things around. I had a lady, because I work online, and I had a lady call me because she wanted a reading, and she had furniture she'd inherited, and it came from her father-in-law, and he didn't like her. So every time she sat on the furniture, he made it very difficult for her. She eventually had to get rid of her furniture.
Wow.
Because the moment she talked about her furniture, I described the old man to her, and she says, yes, it was my father-in-law, and she inherited the house too, and he didn't like that. So he's been extremely difficult.
Oh, my goodness.
Mm-hmm.
So is that one of those things where, because you were talking about, you know, doing a house clearing, it's like, is that one of those instances that would be, you know, have been beneficial
for
her?
Yeah, I told the lady what to do, and she didn't take my advice correctly, so it didn't work.
Uh-huh.
And then she called up, and I said to her, did you do it this way? And she said, no, I did it this way. I said, well, it's not going to work. Go and do it the way I told you. And she did, and it worked immediately.
Wow.
Yeah,
wow.
Sometimes they don't like it when we have their stuff, and other times they like it. It's just like in life. You get good ones and you get bad ones.
They're all part of your family tree.
Well, when I call mine up, and I call mine up whenever I want help, I call mine up, but I make sure to specify exactly who I want. Because I don't want someone I don't know. I won't just say I call upon my ancestors, because I don't know who I'm going to get. So I'm very specific in who I call.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I would be interested, because if I just generically did that, it's like my mother was the genealogist for the family, and it's like she had, she showed me one time scrolls she had going, you know, back to, like, I don't know, I think on my dad's side, like, yeah, this guy was like the first mate on the Mayflower. Of course, it turns out, you know, the Mayflower was actually a pirate ship. Dude was like, he was the first mate on a pirate ship, and it's like, and that was back in the days they didn't have all the niceties of how you got promoted. It's like, you got promoted by being the toughest dude on the ship. You know? So, there's galley bags out there. I'm like going, that would be interesting to talk to them.
Yeah, some of them, my father's family was one of the first people to travel on a ship to New Zealand.
Wow. My goodness. Yes. And that was in a day when it wasn't any pleasure trip. Holy moly.
No. It was not a pleasure trip. And I know when I looked at the ancestral thing, one of my ancestors died in childbirth. She was stillborn on the ship.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of interesting stuff. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Yeah, you do.
I keep thinking, you know, right. After somebody trying to say something, I was like, I'm jumping, guys. It's like, I'm sorry.
Oh, it's okay. You can step on me all you want, Kelly. It's all right.
Okay, now you're going to go. I'll be your rod. Oh, thank you, Seth. No.
Give you a little bit back. You do past life regressions, don't you?
Me, yes, I do. Yes.
So
I think it's a... Sorry?
How important do you think it is for us to know where we were in the past?
It's very, very important, because we do carry over things from one life to another. We do. And unless we go back and fix it, we're going to land up with the same problems in this life.
Like, what kind of things affect us
well,
today?
Like poverty.
Okay.
Poverty is something that does carry over. Unless you go get rid of the poverty that you carried, that you had in one life, and you get rid of it, it will carry through to this.
Mm-hmm.
It does. I've seen it so many times. I did a friend's past life. She's going through a very tough time. And a few weeks ago, we talked. And eventually I said, you know what? I'm going to do your past lives for you. And I did six of her lives. And
wow.
When she walked out of here, she felt amazing. And it's only been like 3 weeks, and she's seen the difference in her life.
She's seen
what a difference fixing up past things can make in your present life.
That would make sense, yeah. If you were like a peasant who started to get, you know, starts death of a potato famine or something like that, it's like, yeah, you might have issues of, you know, being, well, and I've heard that. It's like sometimes people who starve to death in other lives, they end up being overweight in the current one because they're so afraid of starving death. They just eat and eat and eat.
Yeah, well, yeah, because your past lives can affect you so much in this life. You know, it's, I have a fear of fire, and I could never figure it out, and I was burnt in past lives.
Wow.
That makes sense.
The thing that popped to mind was Mrs. O'Leary's shed in the Great Chicago Fire. I was like, oh, whoa. Okay. Wow.
My two fears are fire and water. So, but I know I've been burnt in past life.
Wow.
I like swimming, but I just don't like water that I cannot see the depth in it. I don't like. And cold water. I don't like very cold water, which is Canadian water. But, yeah, I don't like that because that comes from my past life.
Wow. Wow. You know, I got a question for you, too, because I heard this, and I was like, no, I can't verify, but someone told me once upon a time that when you come into this life, like, say, with a birthmark, that a lot of times that was, you know, from, like, a previous life where you had, you know, that's what killed you or something like that. It's like, you know, if you, because, I mean, and I've got a couple of my children have some very interesting birthmarks. It's like one of them, it looks like a bullet hole in him, and it's like it looks like he might have been shot. Another one looks like that, you know, she was like either, you know, stabbed through the head with a spear or something. I was like, oh, that would be a killing ball. You know, so I was just want, you know, and then there's actually my daughter's softball coach, and it's like, I would like to know what happened to that young man. He's got a birthmark, like, literally halfway across his face on the right-hand side. And I was like, going, I looked at him and I went, he got lioness. You know, or something. I was like going, but, you know, if you clear whatever happened, it's like, does the mark go away or is it still,
no,
you know, is that
accurate? The mark won't, the mark doesn't go away, no. But you'll find in your life things go differently. Once you've cleared up your past lives, you can see the difference within basically a few hours. You'll start to feel the difference. The only thing with, I always tell people in their past lives, and I noticed this with my friend, she was terrified of dying, you know, in her past life. And once she had figured out, okay, I will live again, she died, and then that's how we cleared her up. But she was really terrified of dying.
Wow.
The birthmarks are from past lives, but they don't go away. They might change, but they don't go away.
Wow. Or you might change your understanding. I heard that one too. What was it? There's a couple that had a baby, and the baby just screamed and screamed and screamed. And they actually had, I don't know how in the world they did that, but they had like the baby regressed or somebody regressed for the baby, something like that. Anyway, they got told that this child had a life as a Native American Indian. He fell off a cliff. And it's like, and they, you know, saw all this stuff. And when they went and told this child, you know, here's what happened, all of a sudden their screaming baby quit screaming.
Yeah.
And it's like,
yeah.
Wow. That's, you know, so you know, like children who are having, like, maybe behavior problems or something like that, even if they're real little, that might be something that would help, you know, help a parent. I mean, of course, if it's a colicky baby, you know, maybe not.
but stuff like that. It's like, and how would a parent know? I mean, how would they know to, you know, take their child and say, hey,
well not everyone believes in it. That's the whole thing. Most people, a great deal of people don't believe in past lives.
Right.
You know, they don't. And unless you really believe in something, you can't go and sort it out. You cannot.
Yeah.
You know, you can take an adult and tell them the mistake lies in their past lives, but unless they believe in it, you will not get it sorted out.
That makes sense. And then
I know of a man, he limped, and he went for his past lives. He limped. All the time he limped. And when he went into his past lives, he had drowned with his feet stuck between rocks.
Oh, my goodness.
And when he came out of his past life, he limped, but not so significantly anymore. And within a few months, he was not limping anymore.
Wow. So just clearing that. That's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, because our past lives reflect heavily on this life.
Wow.
And I also believe firmly in karma. Because if you do something bad in this life, you're going to have to come back and repeat that karma. You know,
right.
You're not going to go and think, oh, I'm going, I don't have to. Exactly what you do in this life, you will repeat until you fix your mistakes.
Wow.
No. I have, my ancestors, all of them are on the spirit. In the spirit world, except my one grandfather. He was not a nice man, so he's reincarnated already because he has to, you know, repeat his lessons.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's interesting.
Well, that's what happened.
I'm asking about my dad, you know, because my dad crossed over about, oh, I don't know, it was last year, it was actually February 29th, it was leap day last year. And the only thing I really got for him was actually through somebody else, and they just, you know, inquired, I don't know, a while back. He said, well, how's he doing? You know, because he was real confused when he first went over, I guess, because of he'd had Alzheimer's and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like, and somebody told me, well, you know, when they cross over like that, and it's like they're confused anyway on this side, it takes him a while to figure out what's happened to him on the other side. I was like, going, okay,
mm-hmm.
You know, I never didn't know that before. I was like, all righty. And now, just more recently, like from the past week or so, I'd asked somebody and they said, they just said, he's perfect. It's like, you know, they showed a picture of a diamond, but they put their fingers on their lips and it was like, I was going, do they have vows of silence on the other side or something? Or are they put in time out for some reason? You know, it was for whatever reason he wasn't being allowed to talk. And I'm kind of wondering, you know, if they, you know, do something like that on the other side, if they get, you know, stuck in places where it's like, you know, you need to learn this lesson, you need to listen, or, you know, something like that. I kind of wondered.
I think the other side has different levels for them. You know, I don't think everyone sits on the same level. I think they sit on different levels.
Okay.
And like I told someone the other day, she's someone around her past, and she said she kept dreaming of darkness. So I said, yes, because I do not believe when we pass, we go straight into the light. I think we go down a dark area and then into the light.
There's that option.
Yeah,
yeah,
because
I
when you help a suicide person into the light, they are in a very dark place. And then you take them through to the light. And so I think when a regular person who passes goes through the darkness and into a light, whereas a suicide can't go into the light, they're stuck until someone helps them.
Oh, wow.
Because I've done that before, I've helped suicides, but that's very draining.
Oh, that. I bet
mm-hmm.
it would be, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It leaves me with a very bad headache.
Ooh.
Sorry?
I was just going to ask, so when you do a past life regression, how far, I know you mentioned six, is that the optimum?
No, I've done more than that. It depends how, what I see and what is there to fix. Some people don't have a lot of things to fix. Other people do. A lot of people have guilt. Guilt is a very bad one, and blocking things from happening is a very bad one. That's why a lot of people walk through this life without being able to get where they want in it, because they carry all of this guilt and these blockages.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, we never think to fix that in our past lives. But if we don't fix things like that in our past lives, we do carry it forward.
Right. Yeah,
we definitely carry it forward. When I went for my past lives, I think she did 7 or 8 with me. And she said there was a whole lot more to do. Well, I was so shaken up when I came out of those 8. I haven't been back, but I will go one day.
Wow. Did your life change profoundly after that? It's like, you know, that's
actually it did. It did. It did.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So literally you could take somebody back. I mean, I know I've had the, you know, thoughts or, you know, whatever you want to call it. It's like I've had some memory flashes, I'll call it that. But that's Atlantis. And, you know, it's like, I mean, there's a person I know in this life that I was the sister and he was the brother, clear back in Atlantis times. And I know there's got to be, you know, times back before then. It's like, you know, how far back can you take somebody?
You can go back really, really far. A lot of people are new souls, but the old souls, you can go back so many years.
Wow.
So many.
Wow.
Centuries almost. It's unreal.
Millennia. I was going to say it'd be millennia.
Draw to like Egypt. Like I feel like Egypt and the pyramids, that feels like home to me, you know. So I can't even imagine going back that far, you know, and having something that needs to be fixed back then.
Yeah, yeah. It's strange you mention the pyramids, because I went to Egypt about 15 years ago maybe, and when I stepped out there, it felt like home.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
When I saw those pyramids, it felt like I'd been there before, and I'd never been there.
At least this time.
I haven't been there.
It's the most amazing feeling. Know how old it is.
Yeah. Wow. One day I'll take myself there. But in the meantime, Camille, we're coming down to the end of the show, so I'd like to go ahead and give the listeners another opportunity to know where to find you and to know, you know, maybe some of the services that you provide, so that they can utilize your services.
Okay, it's CelticCami.org. Or they can email me at CelticCami@gmail.com. That's how a lot of people get hold of me.
I'm typing here in chat here while I'm going. So I got the www.CelticCami.org, and then the email was their Gmail.
CelticCami@gmail.com.
Okay.
And it's Celtic because my mother's side is Celtic. Well, actually, my father's too, but they're very far back because they moved to New Zealand.
Oh, okay. I was wondering, it's like where are you from? Because you've got the most interesting accent. It's like where were you raised? Where did you?
I was born in South Africa.
Oh my goodness! Okay.
Mhm.
Wow.
But I've lived in Canada for a long time.
Okay.
So what took you from Africa to Canada?
Crime. It's very dangerous in Africa. The crime is really high, and it's not safe. And it's safe in Canada.
Mm. Wow.
Yeah.
I love Canada, except for the weather, but I love Canada.
Except for the weather.
Well, I'm not... the warmth a little bit better than the snow.
Oh, yeah. I don't mind the snow. I just don't like the cold. But I love Canada. It's a good place.
Cool.
I'd never go back to Africa again. It's even more dangerous than when I lived there.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, and because there's so much poverty and there's so much crime and the people are hungry and you can't really blame them because they're hungry, so there's so much crime.
Right.
Well, we are coming down to the end of the show. Camille, thank you so much for coming.
You're welcome.
I'd like to bring you in another day if that's okay.
Yes, you're welcome. Yeah, I'd like that.
All right, and the listeners can find us at psychicsgonewild.com. We look forward to more wonderful shows like today. Thank you so much, you guys. Enjoy your day.
Okay, bye.
Bye. Thank you.
Okay.